Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Tonight's guest has poured her heart and soul into the welfare of our city's youth. Her journey began in an orphanage when a baby died in her arms and she knew she had to act. She built an organisation that welcomes in some of our most vulnerable young people and provides them with not a house, but a home. I'd like to welcome to Great Australian Lives, Susan Barton AM. How are you, Susan?
Hello. Hello, everyone.
It's a great pleasure to have you on the show tonight, Susan. I touched in the intro on what would have been a really harrowing experience for you in that orphanage, I believe in Sri Lanka many years ago. And that is what has led us to the incredible organisation that you head up, and that is, of course, the Lighthouse Foundation. First of all, can you tell us about that experience? And I guess, was it an awakening for you? What happened in Sri Lanka?
Yeah. Well, it's probably about 36 years ago now. Gosh, time flies. It feels like yesterday. Mm. And I was a part of a group of Australians who had heard of the fall of Vietnam and wanted to do something. And in the end, all the work we did towards sending clothes over, big containers of them, ended up going to Sri Lanka. And at the time, I knew that I wanted to expand my family, but I didn't necessarily want to have another child myself. And I was really keen on adopting, and our file went over to Sri Lanka. So at some stage, we decided we'd go over there and immerse ourselves in the country of where our child was going to be born. And to cut a long story short, I went over there. And while I was there, we'd paid for a French nurse to run a crèche there so abandoned children could be supported to go back to their parents and see what their parents needed to keep them. But a little child was very sick, and because she was the only person there and there was about 40 children in this nutritional crèche, I put my hand up to take this sick little baby to the infectious diseases hospital. And my life really changed in an instant. I was a naive girl from the suburbs and hadn't had much of an education, but I walked into that hospital and I knew things were really different than what I experienced at home. And there were severely malnourished children, and one I saw particularly in a further corner had laboured breathing, and I went over and for some reason I was allowed to nurse that child, because in those days and in third world countries it was the case that your family came and looked after you because there wasn't enough doctors and nurses to go around. So I got to hold this little baby and I nursed them, and I had two children of my own at the time that were back in Australia with my mum. And I'd been really missing them. I'd never been away from them before. And I held this baby and I was looking into its eyes and I thought, gosh, you could be my child. And I thought, actually, you know what? You are my child. I'm the only one around here that I can see.
Oh, Susan, you're making me want to cry.
Yeah. And I knew that I could do something. I could take that baby home and I could look after it and I would love it like my own child. And I put that baby down and found out the next day that he'd passed away. And my life really changed, and I knew that I could never live in a world knowing that children were suffering and not doing anything. But as I said, I was hamstrung by my own education, only going up to year 10. And so I had a lot of learning to do, and my pathway really was that when I got back to Australia, I decided that I wanted to foster. And I had, including by the time my fostering days had kind of come to a stage where I had to do something differently, I had my own six children, two of whom were adopted, and I had up to 16 young people living with me. And it became a bit overwhelming because in the end, you know, I was getting through government agencies lots of kids that were 18 and over. And as you know, even today, still, we're putting 18-year-olds out in the street and we're really trying to change that. So Lighthouse has really changed that probably 30 years ago or 25 years ago. We started taking in 18-year-olds and we know what can happen with a lot of love surrounding them and care. And a lot of those young people have gone on to be really well-rounded young people now. You know, I've got a young person from those days who works in the mines and he's got about five homes, and another one that flies around the world in the rag trade, and another one that's an educational psychologist, and another one that looked at being an astrophysicist, and another one
that's incredible, Susan. And it must have been, I mean, obviously it was a dream of yours to help these young people you were fostering, you know, have meaningful lives and achieve their potential, because you would have been putting them back into sometimes abusive homes and neglectful homes, and that must have been very difficult for you, let alone the children. So you had the dream of setting up the Lighthouse Foundation. Was it difficult to do in the beginning?
Oh, look, I think it happened because I was so naive. I just said, this is what I'm doing and I'll find a way to do it. And, I'm pretty determined. I think that's one of my strong suits. And I'm very courageous, but as I said, you know, not very educated. So I was lucky that I met a group of business people through a course called Money and You. I don't know if you've heard of Robert Kiyosaki. But he took me under his wing and said, look, I'll teach you about franchising and policies and procedures because of the outcomes you're getting, you really need to duplicate this and train others so that you have leverage and you do more with less. And I thought, oh, my God, no. He took me dragging and screaming through all his lectures. He took me over to Hawaii and I had to run the gauntlet of coals and fire, and I had to jump from a 50-foot Pampas pole, you know, onto a trapeze and all those sorts of things to really, you know, look at what holds me back. But the long and short of it is that we developed policies and procedures with our first psychologist after she followed me around for a year, and then we started training up others to then open up homes and run the model of care that Lighthouse was privileged to come to, which is best practice, because we weren't just totally government funded. We had, and still today, don't have any recurrent funding, but we do get support from government for our work with younger child protection children. But in those days, it was really fundraising from community who have been my biggest support along the way, and really been the key to our model of care, which is called Therapeutic Model of Care for Children and Young People. I wrote a book on it, which has been published worldwide. Talks about a way of caring for kids. You just can't put a roof over their head and expect that the trauma of the past will change. You have to have young people that feel connected and belong to a community that are loved and
valued as well.
About.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can't imagine it would be the easiest area to fundraise in, though. I mean, there is stigma attached to homelessness. There's stigma attached to mental illness. It's not necessarily a trendy area in which to fundraise. Have you been held back by some attitudes in society?
Oh, absolutely. We used to have a house in the middle of Toorak, so you can imagine, and we did a big fundraiser to do it up, and it became so notorious that we actually decided that we could have two or three homes for the cost of that one home, which had been donated to us. But, you know, people say, well, why do those kids get to live there? And I go, well, why not? You know, they need to be surrounded, you know, in an area. Oh, I'll cry again. They need what we all want, hope for the future, and we want to be able to have piano lessons or go to baseball or go to the movies. And they're things that our kids, don't have, and I mean, most of them have never even heard of a footy club, really, you know, let alone being able to go to one, because they've lived in 18 homes and they've moved, you know, so many schools, and so they're so transient that nothing, they're never long enough to actually belong anywhere. And we know to bring children up, you know, they need, neuroscience says that you need at least 200 repetitions of one thing to change the plasticity in your brain. So that's one of the things. We have homes dotted around Melbourne and a bit further out, and we have usually two living carers. You know, there's different iterations of that depending on the age of the children. And those two carers live in with them. They love them. They care about them. They're trained up in therapeutic care. And then we have a psychologist that works with those children and those carers as a nuclear family. And they can live with each other for 4 and 5 years. And that's the key that makes the difference. They don't have 18 social workers or youth workers coming through their life within a week because someone's sick or gone off.
Yeah, consistency.
So it's that real consistency that families have that, you know, even a good enough family is one that's more important than having, you know, a roof over your head and wondering who the next person is coming that night, and more than likely someone you haven't met. And then you're going to have them tell them you're suicidal. Well, that's not going to happen. Yeah.
So important, and just such incredible work that you're doing, Susan. We're quickly going to go to a break. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. In these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au and more with the incredible Susan Barton when we return.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Tobin Brothers now offer fully live streamed services so that anyone who cannot attend the funeral of a loved one in these very challenging times that we're in at the moment can still view the service and participate. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tonight we have been celebrating the life and incredible achievements of Susan Barton AM. She is the person behind the Lighthouse Foundation, which is an incredible organisation which helps young people, our youth, find themselves when they might be vulnerable, they might be homeless, they might have come from challenging backgrounds. Susan, I want to hear from you. You know, you're obviously still very moved by every person, every story of every person that you help through the Lighthouse Foundation, and it's wonderful to hear. Is there a story of one particular young person who, of course, we won't identify, but one story that has really stuck with you, of someone who really struggled that you help and you've seen just reach their potential?
Yeah, well, probably my first two young people, and I won't mention their names. We've got over 1,000 young people who've been through our program now and moved into dependent living. And these two young people were my very first, and the first young man had been in a Lambie, and he'd lost contact. He went in when he was 3, and he moved in with me when he was 15, and he'd had, you know, about 30 different moves, and he knew he had siblings, but he just couldn't remember who they are. So over time, we started building a life story for him and looking at bringing those people back into his lives that were safe people, and the parents that weren't safe, that harmed him and kept him in a chicken coop with the chickens and all that sort of thing. Oh, he knew where they were and he could contact them, but he chose to do that in a really safe way with, you know, myself and a few other people that he trusted, and met them, but then knew that they weren't the right people for him because he developed a brain. You know, and that's really one of the things that we're very keen on, you know, taking our young people and helping them to develop themselves to be able to make really good choices for themselves. And that's really the crux of our work. And then we had another young person that I said travels all over the world now and is in the rag trade. And he was adopted from a third world country and came here. So he'd had gone through two adoptions. So he felt that no one wanted him and there was something wrong with him. But he's gone on to live a really wonderful life, and both of them have children and are really great parents. About 8 years ago, we decided that our model was so rich and having such great impacts that we were going to work with much younger children and try and intervene when it's early, so they didn't get to us when they'd had 16 different homes or 16 different schools. And these three children, it was written up in the paper, it's got a little article here, the children who say their father butchered their mother in front of them described him as having a face of a witch. And that was only about a year and a half ago. And, you know, little children that, you know, watch their parents shoot up and they're left, you know, one little girl was left under the house for a week because her parents had disabilities and mental health issues, and she'd scavenge food from whoever she could. And kids that go to lunch, you know, lunch at school with lunches that are rancid. You know, the stories are horrific. And really, you know, I'm shocked to know that one child is reported abused and neglected in every 5 minutes in Australia. And 88% of children are abused by someone they know and trust.
That it just horrific statistics and very troubling that all these years on and post royal commissions and all those sorts of things that we still have such a rampant problem in Australia.
I know, and that's what really I can't get over is we have all these great words and we say, well, you know, this shouldn't happen and we need to do better, but we don't, and yet. You know, we'll go around the world and look at other organisations and see what, but they don't look in their own backyard and look at what Lighthouse has been doing, you know, with our team of psychologists for 35 years having these great impacts. And Ernst & Young did a study of us, which was independent, and I think 88% of our young people leave the program and do very well. And you go, well, why wouldn't you look at those programs and be innovative and let go of the past, because we have such an old way of doing things, yet we've got these fabulous workers that have to work in this system that is really broken. And I don't mean to, you know, put on anyone, but we just can't afford to let these kids languish in places that don't work for them. And we have to be innovative and we have to learn by looking at things that do work. And
what
you
is
know,
your
I'd,
biggest
I'd love
challenge? To... Is the system your biggest challenge at the moment, Susan? Or what holds you back the most in making progress with troubled and vulnerable children?
Well, we don't have trouble because we work with our young people, and luckily we've got the ability to make decisions because we don't have to stick to old protocols that haven't worked. But we're held back always by not having enough money to expand and grow what we do. We could really spread right throughout Australia very easily and simply, but because we don't get that recurrent government funding to do that and support, we don't, you don't always know, you know, like for instance now, a lot of our corporates who've been with us for 30 years are falling off a cliff, and we go, well, what do we do?
I was going to ask you, COVID must be impacting you in ways that it's not impacting others.
Oh, absolutely it will, and yet we have some really fantastic supporters over the years of trusts and foundations really have been our mainstay. And most of those don't even want to be acknowledged, you know, or known that they do those amazing things. The Smorgon family, really, we're here because of them. They've been the most supportive, encouraging, long-term, committed supporters of our work and believe in it and are behind us. And really our community committees, which is really unique to Lighthouse. And another one of our keys is that each of the homes we open, we surround with a community committee, a bit like a Rotary committee. Mm-hmm. And it was based on a Rotary committee because I'm a Rotarian in Melbourne. And those committee members make sure that the home for homeless children and young people in their area never close. So they do fundraisers, which they're doing at the moment. You know, they're running around Australia in their living rooms, and they have soirees and they have cooking classes and all that sort of thing. But the most important part of that is young people see people who they don't really know, that they care about them and love them, and that builds a sense of resilience in their community. And those committee members might take them fishing or to the movies or find them a job or tap them into schooling in the year, all those sort of rich things that you wouldn't get in a government institution.
Susan, if you had all the money in the world, what would be the ideal setup for the Lighthouse Foundation? Would we have one in every suburb? How would it work if you could realise that fantasy?
I'm a girl who grew up in Housing Commission. I'm sort of one of the lucky ones that got out, you know. And the density of that living and the crime that went on there, it was a wonder I did survive. And what I learnt from that is that we absolutely need social housing and we need affordable housing, but we need it to be integrated into the community, not big blocks like they've got now where you're ostracised, oh, you live there, and you can't ever bring a friend home because they would know that you're one of those people. Mm. You know, so what I've found is that the best practice model is when corporates get together with governments and we build properties that integrate the whole lot, and we belong to a community. We're not ostracised from that community, that we're part of it. And, you know, I think for Lighthouse, the same thing, that if we could have a lighthouse in every suburb around Australia where, you know, it's really richly supported by the community. Government has a percentage of it as well, so we take young people from child protection who can never go back home, and so we kind of diversify the program a bit, you know, so there's not a whole lot of kids that do drugs in one home, because what do they learn? Same as in jail, they learn how to do drugs much better and refine their craft. So we're very thoughtful about where we put our young people when we place them in our homes. And so one child might go to one home here, or they might go out of their community because that's where they've, you know, they're known by the police, and as soon as they show their face, they're picked up. So we give them a brand new start in another suburb, and it goes on from there.
Now, this is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au and more with the incredible Susan Barton when we return.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Tobin Brothers now offer fully live streamed services so that anyone who cannot attend the funeral of a loved one can still view the service and participate. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tonight we're talking with the incredible Susan Barton AM, who set up the Lighthouse Foundation. It's a foundation who helps our most vulnerable young people turn their lives around, get support, and achieve their full potential. Susan, I want to know, you've helped so many young people over the years, from fostering them in your own home, from adopting, to setting up the Lighthouse Foundation, to putting them on, you know, a better track for their lives. But is there a common thread when you bring these children, these youths into, I guess, sessions with psychologists? Is there a common thread? What do they want? What are they feeling? Is there a common denominator between them?
Well, yes, there is. All our children want is a loving family. They want a mum and a dad, and they want to be like every other kid that surrounds them at school. And I think that most importantly, that their trauma needs to be healed. Otherwise, they're going to go on and be part of what, you know, largely is made up in the penal system, you know, in jails, is a large component of the young people there or the adults there are children that have been in families where they've been abused or harmed or, you know, in pedophile rings, all sorts of things like that. So young people need that trauma unpacked. And so most of our money that we raise goes into highly skilled and trained psychologists that work intensely with those young people. So sometimes we say, oh, we do trauma-informed practice, but it's a lot more than seeing a counsellor once a week or once a fortnight. It's getting to know those children like you would your own children and understanding the nuances of their trauma and having a psychologist that walks that journey with them continuously over a long period of time where they trust. Sometimes it takes them 2 years to open up and trust to even tell them a little bit about, you know, because they feel so demonized and so just broken because of what's happened to them. And to even tell anyone takes such energy and effort. And if it goes on deaf ears, you can imagine how that child feels. It only re-traumatizes them. Then they don't even believe in their community. So we're really careful and very thoughtful. And we wonder a lot about their trauma and work through them in a really slow pace to get to the other end where they can become, you know, healthy, happy, hopeful adolescents.
I can
imagine. Really, most of our work now is we've got to a stage where we believe that the most important thing now is to begin very early on and start a foster. So we've got a foster care program going at the moment. If there's anyone out there that would even think that they might be interested in fostering, we would love to hear from you. We need to find 10 foster families, loving foster homes, and we go on the journey with you again. We've been very innovative with our foster care. We don't just give you a child and you hear from us once a fortnight. We actually wrap ourselves around you and we provide all the training. But more importantly, when you get tired or you feel that you're not coping, we take the child back into someone they know that they love and trust, and we give you a break and look at what's fallen down and we repair that, and then we take another go at it. So we go on the journey with you and we have 24-hour service and our psychologists work with you. So it's a really rich and beautiful experience. So anyone that would like to do that, you can call the Lighthouse reception or you can call me. We'd love to hear from you, anyone. We really want to get this up and running for all the young children that need fostering that have been through pretty traumatic life so far before they get to a stage when it's really entrenched.
That's a wonderful thing you're doing, Susan. I know that for some people there's not, sadly, a lot of incentive to foster through the government system because you know, people feel unsupported. And also just that pain that you felt when you were doing it, of having to return a child to a home that you know is not the best place that they could be. That's a huge decision for a family to make, isn't it, to take on that emotional journey that,
yeah,
that goes
absolutely
with helping a child.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I must say, government know that it's not working and they've been very supportive in supporting us getting this up and going to see if what we believe is what's needed and wanted to have a successful foster placement. And we would really love to show them that there is a way to do it that can be really rich and exciting and wonderful for the child. And we're doing a lot. We're going out. Funnily enough, I've got a couple of my grandchildren. I've got 12 grandchildren. My eldest grandchild does all the school talks for children to learn about homelessness, but to talk to their parents about what they think about perhaps adding to their family, which I did. And Sienna is the daughter of my first adopted child. So, you know, the pain can be broken and, you know, the children don't have to carry that pain. And my other little granddaughter, Annie, is learning at school. She's in grade six and learning all about homelessness now, and said, "Nanny, you've got to put me on radio because I'm going to be doing that one day myself." So I promised I would say her name today.
Well, there's a shout out to her. For those listening who may not be able to foster, you can still help with Lighthouse, can't we? We can volunteer there.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, all of our committees really need volunteers. We need corporates who think they can make a difference. We need wise people that have, those grey nomads like me that have had really big lives and still want to keep contributing. We need each and every one of you because you all make up the circle of care that surrounds our children and gives them a sense of belonging and connectedness. And each and every one of you do play a part in that, but also can play a part in that. And I really, if you think you can, just talk to us and we can talk you through it. And if it's not for you, fair enough. But most of the time when you hear about what we do and what can happen, we can make a difference to all the children in Australia. And Nelson Mandela said there's no keener revelation to a person's soul than the way it takes care if it's most vulnerable. And I really believe that, you know, everybody can make a difference. And with Lighthouse, because we don't have those same things that keep you away from those young people, in fact, you can come in and make a difference and heal them.
If you are listening at the moment and you want to get in contact with the Lighthouse Foundation, the number is 9093 7500, or you can email office@lighthousefoundation.org.au. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. If you've enjoyed tonight's episode, please subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Tobin Brothers now offer a fully live streamed service so that anyone who cannot attend the funeral of a loved one can still view the service and participate. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. We are talking tonight with Susan Barton AM, an incredible woman born in Canberra but grew up in Melbourne, who set up the Lighthouse Foundation after having a moment in an orphanage in Sri Lanka 36 years ago, which changed her life. Susan, the Lighthouse Foundation is going strong at the moment. You've got a foster program, you've got a volunteer program, and you've got... How many kids would you have helped over the years? Is there a number you can put on it?
Yes, we're celebrating our 30th year next year. And when we celebrated our 25th, we counted over 1,000 young people. So it's probably getting... We're long-term, so we don't want, you know... It's not about numbers for us. It's about impact and quality of care. So it's well over the 1,000 young people. And as we expand and open more homes, of course, we can really take in more young people. And currently we're looking for, as I said, you know, some of our corporates are falling off a cliff and unable to help at this moment. So we're dearly looking for a large corporate or funder to support what we're doing, which is one of our, I guess, major needs at the moment. Someone that may be doing well in this pandemic that feels they can stretch themselves to help out in a really meaningful and impactful way and take us on our journey of growth to be able to say yes to more children and not turn them away, because it's pretty awful when you pick up the phone and you have to say no, there's no room for you.
I just can't imagine.
Especially after you've made a promise, because that could be your child and it could be my child. And I just can't believe that we would let that happen in Australia, such a beautiful country, and to let kids languish is just, that's my child I say no to every time. And You know, I'm pretty territorial about my kids. You don't come near my kids, you know. They're precious, and every child should be that precious, and everyone should be loved that much. You know, I had a little boy that he was 16, and he'd never had a fairy story read to him. He'd been in and out of institutions all his life, and he threw a tantrum one night, and my son went out to find out what was going on with him, and he came back and he said, "Mum, he's never had a fairy story read to him." So we tucked him in bed and tucked the doona all around his body, and we both sat with him and we read him three fairy stories, and he went to bed crying his eyes out. But I'll never forget that moment, that a child could come up in Australia, grow up, and not have a book read to them.
I'm pausing because I've got tears in my eyes. That is such a, I can't even say a beautiful story, but it's a very touching story. It's eye-opening, isn't it? I mean, most of us are very privileged. Yeah. We don't see or hear or feel any of that sort of trauma in our own homes. And sometimes it can feel so far away from us. But if you are listening tonight and you've heard Susan Barton talk about the Lighthouse Foundation, if you are in a position, even though we're in challenging times at the moment, if you are in a position, a corporate position, any kind of position where you think you can help, the number is 9093 7500, or email office@lighthousefoundation.org.au. That's just a reminder if you think you can help Susan, who's doing incredible work for our youth at the moment. Susan, what's the plan for the Lighthouse Foundation over the next few years? How, and I know times are tough, but how are you expanding?
Our focus for the next 2 years is to really get our foster care up and running. And once we have the first 10 foster carers and they're all settled, then we're going to be growing our foster care program very much like our home. So have a foster care program, which is in Ivanhoe at the moment. And we're looking for as many people in the north who are interested in foster caring, although it's not just for the north, but any person. But we want to develop our hub there. And once we do that, then we are hoping to develop hubs in the south and the west and the east, and I guess really get to more young people. But in the meantime, we really hope that we can continue. We really love working with government, with our child protection children, and making a difference in their lives. They're the most challenged young people. You know, they're still little and, you know, around two to four, who, I mean, the trauma is so big. You know, some of those kids have been raped at that small age, and, you know, with drug addicted families. So you can imagine the level of trauma those kids have. So we love doing our really rich and deep work with them. The psychologists really surround and protect them and work with them really lovingly to get them to a place where they're ready for their next steps, and really focus on having a real ecosystem where we not just take in those 16-year-olds who are going to be put out in the street because they're too old and probably, as you said, not sexy, but we're starting to look at getting those kids earlier and getting them from, you know, like our single mums and bubs program, getting them at an early age and keeping them with their mum and helping her not only survive but thrive.
How long do you look after people for, Susan? I know, you know, you spend a lot, you place a lot of importance on consistency and time and making sure people don't feel chewed up and spat out. What's the average time you would look after someone for?
Look, I always talk about the, you know, magical 2 years, but the truth is some children might only need 6 months and we find a loving family member that would take them on, which is much better. You know, they need to be with, have a sense of family and belonging. But if that's not possible, there are, you know, usually about 2-ish years if they've come in older, maybe much longer probably when they're little until we find a foster carer. But, you know, we have the challenge of some of our young people that have got dual diagnosis or have got severe mental illness, like they're trying to suicide three times a week. And, you know, there's nowhere for them to go. There's no social housing or affordable housing. Since NDIS has come in, there's a little bit more support, but it's the housing thing that's always that thing that gets in the way of that long-term, that long-term well-being for them. So we've had this little, this young girl for 5 years now, and she still needs that. You know, if she was on her own, she would just take her own life. That's the nuts and bolts of it. And we've recently had two young people that have committed suicide because life's just been so hard for them. And, you know, there's no hope to get out that. And so we don't want to see that happen. And in fact, in 35 years, it's a real rarity in our organisation to lose any of our kids because, you know, like I said, they're my kids, and over my dead body will they pass. But, you know, sometimes life has been just so horrific for them that the flashbacks and the thought of trying to live in a world that's so bleak and dark for them, it's just too big. So for them, housing, you know, and a supportive community is really important. So I'm really big on looking at government changing and NDIS, looking at how we can provide homes for these young people where we don't waste all this money, but we give them the opportunity to buy their own home over a long period of time. And government used to do that probably about 50 years ago, and it was such a great thing. And I would love to see them pick that up again and give people that they've now housed because of the pandemic an opportunity to be housed. Pretty simple, you know. Let's just house them.
Susan, you've done some incredible work and you continue to do so. And I love hearing that all these years later, almost 30 years on since you started the Lighthouse Foundation, that you still have that personal passion and emotion for what you do. Thank you for being with us tonight. It has been a real honour to have some of your time.
Oh, thank you, Laura. It's been a privilege to speak to everyone. Thank you.
This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. If you've enjoyed tonight's episode, please subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast. And of course, join me the same time next week when we celebrate another Great Australian Life. For Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.